Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Righteous Talk on Love and Relationships with Relationship Coach Derek Q. Sanders. Here we address real issues with meaningful content and open, honest dialogue between men and women, speaking from a place of truth and wholeness, which often does not reflect the lies that many of our experiences have told us or shown us. Thank you, Derek Sanders. Love is more, and we have yet more to experience. Let's talk. Welcome to Righteous Talk on Love and Relationships with Relationship Coach Derek Q. Sanders. Here we address real issues with meaningful content and open, honest dialogue between men and women, speaking from a place of truth and wholeness, which often does not reflect the lies that many of our experiences have told us or shown us. Thank you, Derek Sanders. Love is more, and we have yet more to experience. Let's talk.
Can you hear me now? Sorry, I think I had my mic off. Hold on 1 second. Okay, cool. All right, cool. Jennifer just told me you guys can hear me. So I guess I got to start all over. I'm sorry. My microphone was off. I had all types of crazy stuff happen. My show is actually hosted in Detroit. Tamika Kane, who's the person who's over this particular network, she's in Detroit. So when I set up the show, I have to set up the show on Detroit time. I didn't set it up on Detroit time. I should have set it up for 8 o'clock, which it'll automatically start at 7 o'clock our time. I set it up for 7 o'clock. So when I went to sign in, the show was already on. So anyway, and then I had my mic off. So anyway, we got that corrected. My mic is on. You guys can hear me. And let me tell you where you can find me. Most of you all who are listening have already know where to find me. But for those of you who may not, or those who may hear the show in the archives, you can find me on social media at facebook.com/Derek Q. Sanders. That's D-E-R-E-K Q Sanders. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Find me at my website, www.DerekQSanders.com. That's DerekQSanders.com. I write a blog there. You can find out about my books. I have two books, Ladies Little Black Book, 21 Questions on Men, Love, and Relationships. I have another show, another book, Outdated, Rethinking How Men Date Women. So you can find that book there. As well, you can find my blogs there that I write, or articles. You can find those on Black and Married with Kids as well. All right. So I don't think I'm forgetting anything. But tonight, what we want to talk about is how to choose a good man. And let me make, and I specifically said a good man because I wanted to make a distinction. Because a lot of times when ladies reach out to me and they're asking questions about dating, about men and stuff like that, it's just kind of in general. And that's kind of a problem because you need to, if we make a distinction between good men and bad men, that kind of like really helps out a lot. Because a lot of times the problem is that the person that's being entertained, dated or whatever, is just not really a good choice. And it seems as though that there's, I'm trying to be careful how I say it, but it seems like sometimes ladies don't recognize that there's a difference between good men and bad men. We're not all the same. And some of the things, some of the results ladies are getting, some of the things that you all are dealing with is because the men are not good. They're not good men. They're unsuitable. They're not good men. Because some of this nonsense that I'm getting inboxes about and calls about is because these guys are just clearly not good men. And some of this stuff, a lot of the stuff the guys are doing, good men don't do these things. So I don't want to get ahead of myself. I want to start the show off. I want to talk about manhood, because we need to kind of cover, kind of have some foundation and things like that. Because actually, for you ladies, and this show is basically for you ladies, because it's how to choose a good man. I want to talk about just actually some of the things that I would talk to men about, some of the things that I would talk to guys about, some of the things I actually do talk to guys about as far as being a man. And I think it would be helpful for the ladies to understand, to hear those things, so that you can see the, if I can use the title of a play my cousin was in, my cousin Orlando, The Fabric of a Man. If you can see what a man is made of, or what a man should be made of, then it should be helpful for you when you're choosing a man. And let me make this clear too. When I say how to choose a good man, I'm not saying you go out and choose a man. I'm saying out of the men that pursue you, out of the men that show an interest in you, you know how to make a better choice, or you're able to make the better choice out of the men that that present themselves to you. And let me also say this too. If anyone wants to talk, you hit 1 on your keypad, and then that'll let me know your hand is raised, and I can open your line so you can talk. But let me set this off right. I want to play a poem that I found. It's called Manhood by Trey Elijah. It's only 2 minutes. It's real short, but it's a young man, and he's talking about basically the perils of a young man wanting to be a man or going to manhood. I thought it was really interesting and befitting. So check it out. It's only 2 minutes.
Scores of authors from across the nation will autograph books on Saturday.
Okay, that wasn't the right one. Here it is.
I'm at the threshold of becoming a man, and like Peter Pan, I turn around and I run. Not because I want to be a boy forever, but because of what being a man has become. Somewhere along the road, we lost the definition. We need to break tradition, U-turn, and transition to a road less traveled. Because I look around at the world and I'm baffled by all of these examples that are on display, preaching morals that bring decay. Why are there so many children being raised by single women? Since when did being a man mean neglecting your responsibility and thinking up clever messages as excuses for promiscuity? Throwing away everything for the touch of a mistress, leaving their kids' eyes full of tears on Christmas because a dad was the only thing they had on their wish list. You've gotten off track by some distance, because getting a girl pregnant doesn't make you a father. You need to be there and be the first love of your daughter. Set a good example to your son, instill good character that can't be undone. Why have we degraded women down to objects of pleasure? Like broken hearts are the currency we're gonna use to measure our manhood. We're just boys in disguise, constantly chasing different lies, like step on any and everyone to get the office in the sky, because at the end of the day, it's just me, myself, and I. But the greatest man to ever live gave up his life, and we're just standing by and letting chivalry die. With these preset standards, I can no longer comply. I want to be someone people can rely upon. I want to be strong and have a shoulder for people to cry upon. Give my all in trying times, stand firm in changing tides. Put others above myself, not conform to the world, but seek eternal wealth. Be able to make tough decisions and do the right thing when not in people's vision. Be able to admit when I'm wrong without delay. Say I'm sorry and realize the promise that I just made. It's time to make a change, unlock the world's chains, and make a stand. A new Neverland, full of godly men who serve, protect, value, love, and respect women.
All right, see, I told you it wouldn't be long. But, I mean, it's very interesting listening to that that poem. I found it last week when I was preparing for the show. And it's somewhat disheartening, somewhat sad to listen to a young man talk about becoming a man and basically wanting to retreat from that because of what he's seeing out here. In preparing for this show, I wrote a quote at the beginning of my, I write out the points I want to talk about. But it says, and I believe this, the temperature of any civilization is measured by how the men in the culture value the women. So when you look at any particular culture, you can get a measurement of that culture. You can see the climate, the pulse of that culture by how the men in that culture value the women. And when you look at our culture and you see how women are devalued, not valued, devalued, that's not to say that all of us, that none of us value women, because that's not true. We do. But overall, when you look at our culture, our women are greatly devalued to the point that they don't even value themselves. The things that they do that they think show value, it doesn't. It objectifies them. And I remember years ago, I was back home living in Detroit, and I went into what we call the party store. I was thirsty. I went in to buy me a beverage. And I remember opening the door to the cooler to get whatever it was I was going to drink. And I just noticed on the glass, it was a picture of a scantily clad woman. And it's like, I'm thirsty. I'm going to buy something to drink regardless, whether there was no picture on there or not. But it's interesting, if you think about it, our culture, women are objectified to sell products, be it a hamburger, a submarine sandwich, a pop, as we call it, or a soda, as you guys call it, or a Coke here in Tennessee. But women are used as props to sell merchandise, to the point that when I scroll down my timeline, the pictures that I see of women are pictures where she's looking over her shoulder with her butt showing, you know, with her butt prominently displayed in the picture, or where women are talking, you know, who's got the nicest butt. And you see a picture of Kim Kardashian, Amber Rose, Nicki Minaj, or somebody else. And then there's discussion about whose butt is fake, who's real, as though these things actually really have value, or value beyond sex, or something like that. And that's the culture that we live in. And that's not something that women have created for themselves. We live in a male-dominated society. And these are things that men have determined are valuable, to the point that through so many generations of this type of treatment, this type of representation, that women have come to become willing participants in their own degradation, where women aspire to be ranked among this stuff. I remember having a friend, we were talking about something, and she said something about being sexy. And I asked her, I said, why do women, not all women, but I'm like, why do you speak about that as though it's an accomplishment? It's no accomplishment to be sexy. That just means somebody want to have sex with you. That's not an accomplishment. I promise you, it's not. It's not an accomplishment. There's not too many people on the planet that somebody going to have sex with them. They may not go tell somebody about it because they might not be able to get credit for it. You know, with men want credit. So if you got a hot woman, somebody you think is fine, he want credit. So he got to tell somebody because she's hot. If she's not hot, he ain't going to tell nobody, but he'll still have sex with her. That's not an accomplishment. That's not an accomplishment, even though we have pageants and things that heavily are weighted on that, how well a woman looks. I don't, you know, we don't have too many, we don't have pageants or shows where we talk about how intelligent a woman is, how she makes wise decisions, how she keeps a man from selling a farm, because stuff that men will do, we'll go out, we're risk takers, we're huge risk takers. We'll go out and do things that are crazy because we have an idea. And a woman will say, no, wait a minute. What if this, or this happens? And she's thinking more about, you know, security, which is great. I mean, it shows the compliment. You know, he's going to go out and take the risk. It's good and it's necessary to take risks to be profitable. You know, so you can go out and you can do some things and be productive. But it's also good to have that person that says, well, wait a minute, did you think about this? What if that doesn't happen? What if this doesn't happen? Those are values that we don't see enough of. It's more to it than just how she looks. Because seriously, I mean, a man can look at a woman in 5 minutes, he can determine that he finds you physically attractive. That's it. It takes longer than that to get dressed up, to put the makeup on and all that stuff. And it takes a guy 5 minutes to look at you and see whether or not he finds you attractive. All right. So, again, I got off a little ahead of myself. But what I want to play a video. This video is 14 minutes. It's a TED Talk. And I wrestled between this TED Talk and there's another one. Both of them are very, very good. And somehow I ended up doing this one, but it's called Be a Man by Joe Ehrman. But it's very, very good. You guys will like it. It's a TED Talk. If you want to see it again, you can find it on, or if you want to see it, because you won't see it, you'll hear it. You can find it on YouTube. But he talks about, I mean, it gives a really, really good foundation on manhood, for real, serious manhood. Not the stuff that we see out in Hollywood where, or what we see on television, where, you know, the man is basically the adult boy who's not really been taught to be responsible, who's not been taught how to value a woman, who's not been taught how to love a woman. If anything, it's like the roles are reversed, where you get the very responsible woman who's trying to coax the man into being what he should be, really to be what he should have been when he approached her in the first place. But this man, this is something, like I said earlier, what I'm going to put, these are things that I would share with other men and talk, you know, in talking about being men, being responsible men. And it's things that I think you ladies should hear. So when you're dealing with men, you have a clear idea of what the foundation of a man should be. And this clip goes into that. So after we listen to this clip, then I'll go into some more stuff. We'll go from there. All right. Listen, again, it's only 14 minutes. Check it out.
Talk about three words today. Three words that are a phrase that have become one of the most culturally destructive mandates in this culture. Now, if we could change these words, we would change the world. But in order to rewire and reframe these words, you need some kind of laboratory. You need some kind of delivery system to make it practical. So I'm going to take my three words and I'm going to dump them into the world of sports. Why sports? Well, think about the role that sports plays in the globe and in America. Sports will engage more individuals, more families, more communities in a shared activity than any cultural activity, organization, or religion in America. It has become the secular religion of this society. And there's a transmission of values, the transmission of this phrase that does tremendous amounts of destruction. Second reason, sports. Historically, sports have always been a metaphor for social change. Until recently, when we've moved into this win-at-all-cost kind of mentality, sports have always been a way to integrate immigrants into American culture. Every ethnic group that's ever been ghettoized, sports has created a way out of that ghetto. When you talk about civil rights, when you talk about women's rights, when you talk about human rights, you think of the role that sports and athletics have helped to play to bring them into the political and mainstream consciousness. I want to take my redefined phrase and have sports move that out. So what is the phrase? I want to say it's the three scariest words that every man receives in his lifetime. And the phrase is to be a man. And I'd ask every man listening to this, you think about the context when you were young and someone told you to be a man. It was almost always in the context of stop acting that way. Stop with the tears. Stop with the emotions. Don't be some kind of mama's boy, some kind of sissy. Be a man. And what young boys are taught at a very early age, that in order to be a man, they've got to separate their hearts from their heads. Boys are taught that they have emotions, to show them, to share them, to emote them. Somehow those things are considered signs of masculine failure. So we have this massive repression of the very thing that makes us humans, makes us contributors in this world. So let me show you what the socialization process looks like in America. 5, 6, 7 years old, every boy is given that mandate. Then this enculturation process gives every boy three fundamental lies about what it means to be a man. The same lies that were fed to me when I was a boy are being fed to boys today. And the first lie is this, and I think every boy in America learns this by the time they're 7, 8, 9 years old. They learn this on ball fields and playgrounds and during recess all over their community. That is, as a culture, we associate masculinity with athletic ability or size or strength or some kind of skill set that allows you to compete on that playground and win. So what happens for those boys that have athletic interests and abilities that can catch the down and out, hit the hanging curve, those boys are elevated on that playground. They're given a little more value, a little more worth. They're even ascribed a little more masculinity. And what I want to say, that is an absolute lie. Being a man doesn't have a single thing to do with athletic ability, size, strength, and the capacity to compete and win. Second lie every boy in America learned today by the time they're in junior high school, and that is we associate masculinity with issues of sexual conquest. What's it mean to be a man? It means you can bring some young girl alongside of yourself and then use her. Use her to either gratify some kind of physical need or use her to validate some kind of masculine insecurity. That certainly doesn't make you a man. That makes you a user of other human beings. Then later on, you get the third lie in this culture, and that is we associate masculinity with issues of economic success, as though you can measure what a man is based on his job title, his position, power, or the amount of possessions someone has accumulated. That, too, is a fundamental lie. The problem is we live in a society where all kinds of men associate their self-worth with their net. Now, I could take those three lies and tie them into just about every psychosocial problem we have in this country. And I don't care whether it's girls with babies, boys with guns, immorality in boardrooms, or the beatdown women take in America. These three lies are embedded in almost every advertisement that's connected to sports that's directed at men. We've got to figure out how do you redefine, reframe this term of what it means to be a man. So once you're given those socialization process, every boy's given the mandate, that then produces a thing called alexithymia. Alexithymia is a mental health designation. It's a Latin word. A means without, lex means words, thymia is emotions and feeling. It's an inability to put your emotions and feelings into words. The American Psychological Association would say 80% of American men suffer from some form of alexithymia. Where does it come from? It comes from the fact when we were 5, 6 years old, we were told to stop with the emotions, stop with the feelings, never given permission to emote, to develop a vocabulary, to even name our feelings as well. And this is where most of the social problems begin. Because if you don't understand your own feelings, your own emotions, you'll never understand the feelings of emotions of another human being. Self-understanding is critical to understand. This creates an empathy deficit disorder, an inability to understand what other people are feeling and what causes those feelings. This is the precursor for bullying, for hazing, for dating abuse, gender violence, for violence all over America. So this then creates kind of a, you have the socialization, the mandate, you have the alexithymia, and then that creates kind of a covert masculine depression. It's covert, all you see are the three footprints. The first thing you see there is isolation. The tremendous number of men that do not know how to enter into meaningful relationships with another human being. And whenever you see the moral failure of men in media almost every day, it's always because they lack one meaningful relationship to give some kind of accountability, some process with the temptations, the issues that people are dealing with. Second thing you see is substance abuse. I don't think there's anything more painful than feeling like you don't quite measure up as a man. And given the cultural definition, you'll never have a long enough athletic career, you'll never sleep with enough women or make enough money to ever feel fulfilled and satisfied by that. So men start to medicate the pain of not feeling man enough. Alcohol, drugs, sex, materialism, pornography, whatever men need to attach to in order to feel secure about their own masculinity. Then the third thing, footprint up there is violence. America is one of the most violent nations in the world. Men have been using violence to get over for generations. But you think about the violence perpetrated on girls and women in this country. Gender violence is a male crime of power and control. Men have been using violence, and violence is nothing more than unprocessed grief. And as I said, that boys that can't cry shoot bullets. So if that's the lies of masculinity, then what does it mean to be a man? How do you define masculinity? When we tell a boy to be a man, we ought to have some kind of clear and compelling definition that's going to help guide his own masculine soul as he moves through this world. So let me give you my definition of masculinity. I think masculinity comes down to two things and two things only. And they're really the same for women as well, because it's really about our common humanity. Now, I learned this not only through my own life process, but I've been in pastoral ministry for almost 30 years now. And in my faith tradition, part of my job is to sit on the deathbed of dying people and help prepare them for the next stage of life, if you will. And here's what I know to be true for me, and I know to be true for every single man out there. If you were on your deathbed today, knowing that you were going to die tomorrow, and you wanted to measure what kind of man you were, what kind of success you had in life, it'd come down to two things and two things only. And the first is this. On that deathbed, you recognize that all of life is about relationships. It's about the capacity to love and to be loved. What's it mean to be a man? It means you can look somebody in the eye and say, I love you, and receive that love back. You know what the questions you ask at the end of your life? They're not about awards or achievements or applause or what you accumulated. They're all questions of relationships. What kind of husband was I? What kind of father? What kind of partner? What kind of son? What kind of friend? Who did I love and who did I allow to love me? Now, you think about that socialization process of men in this country. Men aren't raised to be relationally successful. We're taught how to compare and compete with all the wrong definitions of what it means to be a man. You know what happens on that playground? 7-8-year-old boys already mandated to be a man, starting to repress, socialize. We start walking around that playground and boys police each other. And they want to find that one boy that's just a little too soft, just a little too gentle. And then we all gang up on that boy. And we tell that boy to stop acting that way. Stop with those tears. Stop with the emotions. Don't be a sissy. Be a man. And then as 8- and 9-year-old boys, we walk away from that experience thinking, my goodness, I hope that never happens to me. And we start conforming, building out this facade, this machismo, in order to defend and deflect questions about our own masculinity. Now, what would happen in Baltimore, in America, if all the individuals, all the institutions came together and said, this next generation of boys, we're going to teach them the essence, the epitome of what it means to be a man, emanates from the heart. It's the heart that allows for attachment. It's the heart where passion, it's the heart where values, empathy, compassion resides. It's all about the heart that needs to be nurtured. First thing, it's all about relationships. Second thing about masculinity. Again, if you were on your deathbed today, about to die tomorrow, wanted to measure what kind of man you were, what kind of success you had in life, it'd come down to this. At the end of your life, you want to be able to look back over life and know that you made a difference. You left some kind of mark, some kind of imprint that you were here. All of us want to leave some kind of legacy behind. Legacies are always built around two things. They're always built around relationships. And the second thing, they're always built around some kind of commitment to a cause. Every one of us has a responsibility to give back. And it's a challenge of every man, every woman, to identify their own unique cause in life and how they're going to make a difference in this world. It's all about relationships and commitment to a cause. So what would happen again if all the coaches, all the athletic leagues, we not only nurtured boys' heart, rewired them to live out of their hearts, wholehearted living, but we also helped them to discover their own cause, their own unique contribution in life. It's all about relationships, and it's all about commitment to a cause. So think about that for a moment in the context of sports. What is a team? A team is nothing more than a set of relationships for a cause. Every team has a common purpose. It's got performance goals and objectives. There's some kind of mutually accountable work ethic. But every team is always built around the trust, the respect, the integrity, the dignity of every team member. If a team is a set of relationships for a cause, more than that is an ideal place to help boys become men and guide and nurture. So my solution to many of the problems that we face in America today is we need to reframe of sports. We need to redefine what it means to be a coach. And then we've got to rewire broken men that have separated their hearts from their head, and they've got to get connected. And then we've got to do the preventive work. As every young boy grows up, We've got to give them affirmations. We've got to give them some kind of validation about all of their emotions, all their feelings, all of their humanity. So the next time you see some man, some young boy, struggling with the tears, with the emotions, well, you think what would happen in this world if we walked up to that person and said, way to be a man, because men live out of the fullness of who and what they are. They live out of their hearts. And somewhere we've got to change the cultural milieu in here to make sure that when we tell a boy to be a man, we give him a clear, compelling definition. Masculinity, relationships, commitment to a cause. Thank you.
Man, wasn't that great? I struggle with that because the other one that I started to play was just as good, and I wrestled between the two. I'm not going to play the other one because it's probably about as long, and I don't want you guys I don't want you to get bored listening. But I love that kind of stuff because it's an opportunity to listen, and you know, and get a good foundation of what manhood is, which is uniquely different than what we see from day to day, what we see on television, because that's what I had written down. One of the things, popular culture has redefined what it means to be a man over the last few decades through the media, through television, film, music, print. And some men don't even know what it means to be a man. A lot of them don't. I may even play this other clip. It was another clip. It was only 2 minutes. I may play it in a minute. But the question was asked to men. If you saw it, you could see somebody had like a microphone and they just went out and they just asked men, what does it mean to be a man? Or when did you become a man? And just listening to the responses, it was just like ridiculous. Actually, I'm going to play it real quick. It's only 2 minutes, but listen to this and think about it. These are some of the men that approach, if not you, but approach other women. And somebody's asking them, when did you become a man? And these are their responses. There's only 2 minutes. It'll be real quick. Or maybe I don't want to play. Let's see. Okay, never mind. I didn't want to play. But I remember some of the responses. The first guy was like, I don't know. I don't even know if I've become a man yet. You know, my father's a man. And one guy, I think, said, I know before I saw one, the guy said when he had sex for the first time. Another young man said when he became a father. I mean, that one really doesn't sound so bad, but that's not when you become a man. You don't become a man, you know, when you move out of your parents' house. You can move out of your parents' house and still not have reached manhood yet. And the crazy thing is, in our culture, we have nothing to measure, for the most part, any standard that tells us when we have become men. But there's a couple of areas I want to talk about. I want to talk about what I call the garden called home. I want to talk about what happens in the home, how that influences men, how that influences us. And first, let's look at, the garden called home. What seeds were planted in the home? It's those seeds that laid the foundation for the harvest that the world around you reaps because you're in it. So it's those things that happen in our home that cause us to become who we are, either from what we learn or from the things that we reject from what we were taught at home or what we saw at home. Either way, we were affected, and that has to do with, it affects who we become later. As children, how did the home influence how men see themselves and how women see men? Let's look at single-parent homes. I want you to consider something. When a woman raises a son and a daughter in the absence of a father, she has to assume dual roles, which was never intended. If a woman was intended to parent by herself or alone, It would seem logical that she would be able to produce babies by herself. If she has to fend for herself and her children, how would that affect how she raises her children? How will she raise her daughter and how will she raise her son? Will she raise her daughter to be defensively independent and her son to be weak and irresponsible? Now, let me explain what I mean by defensively independent. Every adult should be able to manage, or every adult should be independent. Each adult should be able to manage the affairs that come with an adult life. They should be able to manage their households, pay their bills, go to work, and all those things. That's being independent. Those are the things we should check for in the people we choose to date. But by defensively independent, what I mean by that is when a woman in word tells a man that she doesn't need him, or in her actions show him that he isn't needed. You know, some women leave no space in their lives for a good man to occupy. And what happens, sometimes I think about when a woman is a single parent. And I'm not beating up on women, but I'm talking to women about how to choose a good man, because I beat up on guys too, but I'm not beating up on women at this point. But I'm specifically talking to women because that's what this subject is about. But when you have a single parent household where the mother is heading up the household and she has dealt with certain frustrations in relationships with men, I've wondered, how does that affect how she raises a boy to a man? How does that affect how she raises her daughter to become a woman? And what I see a lot, if you think about it, what you see is she'll raise her daughter to be independent, to be able to take care of herself. Why? She should be able to take care of herself. Don't get me wrong. The son should be able to. Should be able to take care of himself as well. But she'll raise her daughter in a certain manner because she's trying to protect her daughter or prepare her daughter for what she had to deal with, assuming that her daughter's going to have to deal with the same thing because of how she views men based upon what she's experienced. So she raises her daughter to not need anything from a man. She raises her daughter to be strong. You know, she can pay her bills. She can do this, that, and the other. She don't need a man to do nothing for her, those type of things. And I'm not saying that it happens every case, because it doesn't. But I'm saying in some cases it does. But then the flip side is, how does she raise that son? And a lot of times the son ends up being, as the old saying goes, mothers raise their daughters and love their sons. And she raises her son to be weak and irresponsible because she takes care of him and the daughter takes care of him. You know, he doesn't have to cook, clean, or any of those types of things that everybody should know how to do. A man should know how to do those things, because who's doing those things for him when he's out on his own? When he moves out of the house, who's preparing his meals for him? Who's cleaning up his home for him? Who's paying his bills? Who's taking care of those things that he's supposed to take care of? Right? Who's doing those things? He should be prepared to do those things. But a lot of times the sons and daughters are raised differently. I mean, and obviously they should be raised differently in some regard, but as a parent's job is to prepare a child to be an adult and to be able to take care of themselves. But these dynamics that happen in these relationships, because a woman has learned from men that she can't trust men, that men are unreliable, then she prepares her daughter for those types of men, which is also, that's a whole other show dealing with what I call the deficit model of relationships, and how our relationships, we get in relationships defensively, preparing ourselves for the worst. But so the mother raises her daughter to be independent, and she raises the son to be weak and to be a user, because he's used to mom taking care of him. He's used to his sister cooking and all those types of things, and he doesn't have those responsibilities. And the mother raises him to be weak because that's what men are. And in a lot of cases, he becomes he becomes what she becomes, he becomes the man that she gets to love. And I don't mean any sexual sense or anything like that, but she ends up taking care of him, and he ends up being no good, no use for a woman. That's what happens in a lot of these relationships. So, sorry, I just got a weird phone call. I have to tell you about that one, Jennifer, when I finish with this show. So, in addition, some women, and I've seen this happen, some women try to be appealing to a man by showing him all the things they can do without him. You have a woman that appeals to a man, you go out on a date, and she's like, oh, I got this. Or if he's trying to carry something for her, I got it. And you end up appealing to a man by showing him how manly you can be. And I'm not suggesting that it's manly for a woman to offer to pay for her food. But what I'm saying is, when you go out with a good man, not a man, a good man, there's certain things that a good man is going to want to do. He may want to pull your chair out. He may want to open your door and things like that. And often ladies are not used to that because they're going out with guys that don't do those things. Or he may want to walk on the outside of the street. Not that he can really protect you if a car run across the curb, because he can't. But it's a gesture to show that he values you. Because if a car run across, a car come over that curb, y'all both going to get hurt or killed. He's not going to buffer you that much. But that's not the point. The point is to show that he values you, to show that he respects you, that he honors you. And sometimes women, you all are so used to the jokers that when the good man tries to do those things, it's like, oh, no, I got it. And it kind of throws the guy off. Service is a quality of leadership. So if he's trying to serve you, that's a quality of leadership. That's something that you want to look at. That's one of the things you want to look at in a good man is leadership. He's showing a leadership quality by trying to serve you, because that's what he's trying to do. And sometimes you don't recognize that that's what he's trying to do, but he's trying to serve you. I'm not talking about the guy you go out and he say your money not good here, because sometimes you get guys do that. He's insecure. He's using his money like a woman uses her body. He's using his money because he's insecure, and that's how he ranks himself, or he shows his value by how much money he has. I'm not talking about that guy. I'm talking about the guy who's trying to open doors for you and things like that to show that he values you and to show you that you have value. So remember that when you're out with a man, when you're out with a good man and he's doing those types of things. And there's a misconception, talking about service, there's a misconception about what it means to serve. It's looked at as demeaning when it's a genuine act of love. For a man to serve the woman he loves is to show that his desire to please her is more important than his desire to be pleased by her. So when a guy's trying to serve you, he's saying, look, I'm more concerned about you and what you want than what I want at the moment. This is not about me. This is about you. I'm more concerned about your happiness than I am my own. So don't get in a tussle with guys over that. And I'm telling you this stuff to try to help you understand, because sometimes we don't understand each other. You know, sometimes we don't understand you guys. Sometimes we don't understand us. And these are some of the things that I talk to other good brothers about, that we talk about among ourselves, you know, just where we miss each other, men and women, in our communication. You know, service is an act of love. It requires selflessness. Mothers that raise their daughters to be defensively independent do so to protect them from what they face in the men in their lives, or with the men in their lives. Often the sons of the same mothers are raised to be weak and irresponsible, expecting a woman to take care of them. The daughters were raised to be strong and independent because they have to be. The sons are not raised to be strong or independent. They are raised with a sense of entitlement and with a lack of appreciation for women. And that's what ends up happening a lot of times. You get these guys who feel entitled. They think they're entitled to sex. They think they're entitled to have a woman cook for them and all of this kind of stuff. And you ain't married. You're not married to these guys. They're not entitled to that. They're not husbands. There should be a clear distinction between a husband and a boyfriend. That was one of my posts the other day. So again, mind you, remember we're just talking about how the home affects actually both of us, how what we're taught in the home, what we see in the home, how that affects men, how that affects women. I'm going to give you guys a checklist, you know, things to look at so you know what to look for. But the other thing I want to talk about, the next thing I want to talk about, rites of passage. And, you know, a rite of passage is a ritual ceremony that boys go through. And upon completion, they become men. It's something to show, a test or something to show that a boy has become a man. And there are many different cultures that have them, that have different ones. You know, there are cultures in Africa that have different ones. Some of them are like real crazy. I know the Maasai warriors, I used to be a part of a Black studies group 20 something years ago, where we actually had a Maasai warrior that came out. And this guy was African, and he had on the African garb, you know, like the little skirt type thing or something he had on, but he had on traditional African clothing. And they had to go out and kill a lion by like with nothing but like a spear or something crazy like that. And I think it used to be one of them would have to do it. I think now it might be like a group because of the population has decreased of lions. But lions are supposed to be, their roar is supposed to be, I think, be heard over a mile. Can you imagine something that's able to roar and you can hear it a mile away and you have to go out and kill it? That's what they had to do. That's the feat that these young men had to do to show that they, you know, that was their rite of passage in the manhood. But when we look at, when you look at men, what was his rite of passage in the manhood? What event marks his transition into manhood? Every man had an event. I mean, you talk to a man, just like I was trying to play that clip, and you ask him, when did he become a man? Every man has something to tell you. You know, we all had an event. It was the year he turned 18 or 21, when he graduated from high school or college, when he moved out of his parents' home, when he lost his virginity, when he became a father, when his father left the family and he had to be the man of the house, etc. All of these events mark the coming of age for many men. Many of you, the problem you're having with the men in your lives or the men you date is that they have a misconception of what it means to be a man. What shapes his idea of what it means to be a man? Something has constructed the model that he operates under, even if he has never taken the time to ponder what that is. It was the church, the streets, male members in his family, or in the community. For many, sex is a major life event that is believed to catapult them into manhood. Sex doesn't turn a boy into a man any more than kissing a frog turns it into a prince. What it does is it sets him on a course where he equates the value of a woman with her physical beauty and her ability to satisfy his needs and desires. So for a lot of guys, that's the pivotal, especially in our culture, that's the pivotal event in his life that makes him think he's a man, because that's what the culture tells us. That's what we see on TV. So he's had sex, and it's not just had sex for the first time. Then it becomes how many women he has sex with and what he can get those women to do for him, what he can get for them to do for him sexually, what he can get them to do for him financially, how many women he sleeps with, how fine those women are, what they have, what they buy him, all this kind of stuff. For a lot of men, that's what they think manhood is about, because that's what they're taught. And I've said this before, when I was a little boy, I remember somebody asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up. I was a kid. I wasn't even a teenager yet, I don't think. And I remember my uncle, my favorite uncle, said, a playboy. I didn't even know what a playboy was. I was a child. I had no idea what that even meant. But that's what he said. I mean, something I would never say about one of my nephews. But though, that's the instructions that young boys get. One of my good buddies, one of my, what I call him, my young boys, one of my good buddies who's, you know, in his 20s. And, you know, that's what he tells me. He said, man, that's what we had around us. We had men around us, you know, that were players. They had the drug dealers, things like that. That's what was around them. That's what he saw. You don't find, unfortunately, for a lot of men, they don't find men that are talking about honoring women. You don't find them. And when you do find them, send them to me because I collect them. You know, I have buddies, guys that I meet with, that we meet, try to meet once a month, and we sit down and we have those types of conversations. We talk about life. We talk about love. We talk about building. We talk about our futures. We're not sitting around talking about sexual escapades or any of that kind of stuff. To the point one day, it was a lady. We're sitting up. We always go to IHOP because we can sit in there for hours and talk without bothering anybody. And it was one older black lady that was sitting on a table behind us. She put her hand on the chair. I'm thinking she was balancing herself to get up. She gets up and she stands behind the guys. I was sitting across from them. And she says, you know, I was listening to you young men talk. And she said it almost brought me to tears. She said, I didn't know young men talk like this. But we were just sitting around talking about things that mattered. We weren't talking about who we sleeping with. They ain't the conversations we having. Because most of us not sleeping with nobody. You know, we guys that are dating. Some of them are engaged. One of them is married. One of them is engaged. You know, those kinds of things. But anyway, these are the things that good brothers sit around and talk about. And unfortunately, all of us did not didn't have those types of men in our lives. We had the type of men in our lives that I described before, my uncle. Now, I don't say that for a woman to hear that, and that becomes an excuse, because now you understand why he's the way he is. Understanding why somebody is the way they is does not become justification or a good reason for you to pursue a relationship with that person. It's just like right now, if somebody called me and I had to be, I had a great opportunity to be somewhere in the morning at 5 o'clock, and I go outside to start packing my car, and I found out I have a flat tire, and then I look down and see that I have a nail in my tire. Well, the mere fact that I understand why I have a flat tire because I ran over a nail, that doesn't fix the tire. And it doesn't make it, it's not a good idea for me to go and get in my car to try to be where I have to be at 5 o'clock in the morning, because I'm not going to get there, even though I understand why I have a flat tire. And my point is, even though you understand why a man might be deficient, why he might be unsuitable, that does not make him, the knowledge that you have gained, the understanding of why he's the way he is, does not at that point make him suitable. He's not. And what you've learned is you've learned two things. You've learned that he's unsuitable. You've learned why he's unsuitable. And then you learn that you don't need to be in a relationship with him because he's not ready for that. He's not good for that. So don't hear that me telling you this so you can go back and look at a guy and say, okay, now I understand why he's that way. Yeah, you understand why he's that way, but you should also understand that he's not suitable if that's where he's at. And that's what happens a lot of times, especially when you fall prey to those types of relationships. You find yourself in those types of relationships with those types of men, and you find yourself catering and feeding those types of relationships. He's not going to change. You're sleeping with a guy, that's not going to cause him to change. That you're just enabling him to do something that's not beneficial for you, really not beneficial for him either. So the question is too, ladies, is your idea of a man attached to some painful memory from a past relationship? If it is, you have to find a way to see that memory for what it is. Memories are records of past events. They are not predictions of future events unless you repeat the same actions. So if you continually make poor choices, you can expect to continue getting poor results. And what happens sometimes is you see men based upon the men in your past. I mean, that's understandable in a sense. It's understandable that you may have certain fears, certain insecurities, or certain hesitation based upon what you've experienced. But that cannot be your foundation. That cannot be how you look at all men. That can't be the image of all men. So it's just a record of what happened. It's a record of what happened based upon choices that you made. And you can expect to get similar results if you date the same person again or if you date somebody like that person. But the mere fact that he's a man does not tie him to every other man that you will meet in your life. It doesn't. And I realize that men are probably able to make we're able to probably move forward. Well, I don't know. I am. Maybe some men aren't either. But what I was driving at is, at least I am. I know I'm able to look at past relationships where I was cheated on more than once by more than one girl. And when I got into the relationship, I didn't expect my girlfriend to cheat on me because another girl did. I was able to make that distinction. Why? Because I understand that Jennifer was different than Sue. And I'm just making up Sue. I'm making up names of people that I never dated. I didn't date anybody named Sue. So she was different than Sue and Sally and Mary Beth or whoever. So I didn't expect to get the same results because I wasn't dating the same person. And what I'm saying for you all, and I understand that it may be different because women and men are built differently. We're made differently. I understand that. But you have to be able to figure a way to say, look, the experiences I have are based upon things that have happened in my past, relationships that I've had in my past. It has nothing to do with whatever man that you'll meet tomorrow. And that man has to be judged and valued based upon his own actions, you know, what he does, not what somebody else. We're not a collective. We're not a monolith. Some men cheat. Some do not. Some men lie. Some do not. Some men honor women. Some do not. And if you've had a history of men who didn't, that doesn't mean that we all don't. What that means is you're the common denominator in those relationships. You're the one, because none of us have been in relationships that we didn't choose to be in. So if you're in a relationship, it's based upon who you chose to be with. And we have to make better choices. And that's what this show is about, helping you all make better choices. So I think I drove that one home. Now I'm going to give you, here's my checklist. These are things that you want to look at when we're talking about how to choose a good man. How does he handle adversity? And I didn't write these in any particular order. I just wrote them. How does he handle adversity? These are the reasons why we date. We don't date just to you know, be going out doing event planning. That's not why we date. You date. I mean, of course you want to have fun, but remember the reason for dating. The reason for dating isn't just to have fun. It's for you to go out and get a chance to know who this person is. And to see them in different settings and different lights, because different settings will allow you to experience different things. You'll see how that person interacts in different environments, how they respond in different environments, you know, how they mix and mingle, and how they deal with just different situations. You know, it's one thing to go to the movies, it's another to go to dinner, it's another to go bowling, it's another to go to a concert, it's another to go to church. All of those different things, different experiences, and you get a chance. I mean, just different things that come up that you didn't plan, and you get to see how that person interacts. But this one, particularly in adversity, You know, everybody can smile when things are going well, but how does this person handle adversity? Does he fall apart? Do his leadership abilities come out when the chips are down? Or do you have to shoulder all of that? Does he fall apart and he looks for you to step up and take the lead? Because that should not be the case. That should not be the case. No woman wants to be laying up in bed with her husband and you hear a thump in the middle of the night and he expects you to jump up and go see what's going on. That should not be happening. So how does he handle adversity? You know, what does he do when the chips are down? And I mean, obviously, you know, you'll have some part in that because a woman should be able to support a man. But what does he do? How does he handle it? So that's something that you want to pay attention to. Number two, is he able to communicate effectively? Is he able to communicate effectively? Maybe he doesn't talk a lot. He doesn't have to. I'm a talker. He doesn't have to talk a lot, but he has to be able to communicate effectively to you. It's important that you're able to communicate. It's important. It's necessary. However he communicates, can he communicate effectively? Has to. I mean, communication is huge in relationships. Have to be able to communicate. So how does he communicate? Is he effective in his communication? Number three, does he have integrity? Is he a man of his word? Is he the guy that talks, you know, talks smack, put on a good game in front of people? Is he the same person behind closed doors? I mean, and obviously all of us interact differently. I'm the same person in front of the cameras, behind the cameras. I'm the same person on Facebook. I mean, obviously, there are certain nuances. There's certain things I say certain ways on Facebook because I'm on social media because I have a wide audience that I can't say, you know, there's certain ways I say things. I might say a little more raw or a lot more raw if I'm not in certain settings. So I'm not talking about that. I'm still the same person. But saying, does he have integrity? You know what I'm saying? Is he a trustworthy person? Does he have integrity? Integrity is said to be what you do when nobody's watching, you know, or is he just a camera guy? You know, he says all the right things, do all the right things while people are watching and stuff. So that's does he have integrity? Four, does he listen to the words you speak as well as those that are written on your face and carried out in your emotions? That's important for women because sometimes there are things that you say, and then there are things that you don't say. You said certain things, but there are things that you didn't say that are just as important as what you did say. And then there are things that are acted out in your emotions. So is he paying attention to those things? And I'm not saying that you need to be all cryptic intentionally with a person. It's not necessarily intentional, but especially early on in a relationship, you don't even know what you have to build a certain comfort level to be even comfortable enough to reach a certain level of vulnerability with a person. But does he listen to what you say, what you don't say, you know, reading what you don't say, and then what's written on your face and carried out in your emotions, right? That's number four. Number five, does he have courage? It takes courage to be in a relationship. And I'm not talking about some dude that's going out that's ready to, you know, scrap in a barroom brawl. I'm not talking about that. Does he have courage? It takes courage to be in a relationship. It does, because it can get scary sometimes. It can get scary, you know, for both parties, you know, for men too, because we have to be vulnerable, which is really, really awkward for men because we live in a society that does not really, it doesn't really promote being vulnerable for men. It doesn't. I mean, that's what we're listening to on the video, where for men, it says that we're supposed to be tough, be a man, don't cry and all this stuff. Does this guy have courage? Does he stand for something? Does he have the courage to be different and to not have to be like everybody else? Especially for a man, because, you know, when you consider the most of men, or not most, but a lot of men are dogs, whores, and stuff like that. Does he have the courage to say, no, I don't do that? No, I'm not going out chasing other women because that's what the other guys are doing. Does he have courage to say those things? He should. I do. Okay. Number six, does he keep his word? I think I mentioned that earlier. Does he keep his word? That's important. That's very important. Does he keep his word? If he tells you that he's going to do something, does he do it? Or if he can't do it, does he tell you, you know, I'm sorry, I couldn't do such and such, and here's why I couldn't do it, whatever. Those things are important. Those things matter. Number seven, does he protect you emotionally, even from yourself at times when your insecurities shape a negative image of yourself? So does he protect you? When you're saying crazy stuff and your insecurities are blooming, does he protect you and say, no, honey, we're not going to say that? Nah, you can't be saying that, and encourage you, support you, and build you. Because unfortunately, we live in a culture that tears women down. We live in a culture that objectifies women. We live in a culture that thrives off women being insecure. That's how the beauty industry sells you products. It tells you something wrong with your hair, your nails, your eyelashes, your eye color, your butt, all of this stuff. It's like they thrive off women being insecure so they can sell you the cure in a bottle or in a bag. And then it's just, you know, just certain insecurities that you have based upon prior relationships and things like that. So does he protect you emotionally? No, does he protect you emotionally? Even, like I said, from yourself, because sometimes you can say things about yourself that are not good, that are not beneficial. And he should be able to protect you and build you up and say, no, honey, no, that's not how it is. And then he should be able to counter those things and say, no, you're this, you're not that, you're this. Where he's building you, where you may be tearing yourself down because maybe that's what's been done to you in the past. Number eight, is he showing himself capable of leadership? I mentioned that earlier, I think. Is he showing himself capable of being a leader? And I think any good woman wants a man to be able to shoulder a lot of that stuff. I know my girlfriend does. She don't want to be the man. And I'm not talking about controlling her. A leadership position is a position of service. It's a service position. You're serving someone else. And we were built to do that. We were built bigger. We were built stronger. We were built to be able to. We're emotional, but we're able to suspend our emotions and make a decision because we have to. We have to think about what needs to be done. And then after we make that decision, then we can go back and think about how we feel. But we have to be able to make that decision, you know, sometimes on a dime. Women are not always able to do that. And that's not bad. We're just built different. So is he showing himself capable of leadership? Number nine, does he show any signs that suggest he is abusive physically, emotionally, or otherwise? So is he showing signs that he's abusive? And I don't mean necessarily physically, because sometimes we think of abuse as just physical. You know, when a man is putting his hands on a woman, and abuse can be more than that. It can be emotional, where he's beating you down emotionally, where he's talking crazy to you, you know, not building you up. Well, I shouldn't say not building, tearing you down. So is he showing any signs of those things? Because those are things you want to look out for, too. 10. I only got four more after this. Does he share the same values? Do you have the same values as he does? Because let me say this, and I've said this before, because what will happen a lot of times, we get in relationships and we jump in these relationships and just run with it. You know, you're having all the good times, the kissing, the hugging, the romance, all of that, and you jump headlong into the sex and all of that stuff. And you miss all of this other stuff. Then you come back to that. You come back and you start noticing that, you know, y'all not on the same page with some of these things. But because you've done the other things, you're emotionally engaged. You know, you're emotionally engaged now. You want to stay in a relationship because there are other things that are drawing you to that person. You know, sex, you know, you're spending time with them, you like the attention and those types of things. That's why I tell people, when you get in relationships, these things need to be thought about before, like we're talking about now. These things need to be thought about and considered before you go in a relationship so you can start ruling people out before you get a chance to get emotionally attached and all those things where it's harder to walk away from the relationship. You start making excuses. You start compromising, right? 11, does he share the same faith? Nowadays, people think those things don't matter. It does. Do you share the same faith? You know, if you're a believer, he should be a believer as well. If he's Muslim, you don't need to be Christian. That don't mix. We don't believe the same things. We don't believe the same things. You shouldn't be dating somebody who's atheist and you Baptist. Because then the question comes up, what happens when you have children? How do you raise your children? And then even more importantly than that, if you legitimately Christian, you wouldn't be dating somebody who's atheist, no way. You couldn't, I mean, you're not even a committed Christian. Doesn't make any sense. That's going to greatly affect your worldview. Our faith or our lack of faith shapes how we view the world. It shapes our worldview. It affects the decisions that we make in our life on a major scale and a minor scale. You have to consider those things because you pull from those things in determining how you're going to live your life. So you need to be with somebody that has the same faith. All right. Here's another one that's going to sound interesting. Number 12, do you enjoy the same forms of entertainment? And I'm almost done. Phone number 2802. And I appreciate you hanging with me this whole time. Do you enjoy the same forms of entertainment? And here's why that's important. That's important because, I mean, think about it. We have, most of us have difficult lives. We have, you know, lives where we have to do things that we don't want to do. We have to go, most of us have to go work jobs that we don't want to work, at least until we can get to the point where we can do the things we want to do. You know, a saying that I say is, you know, you do what you have to do so you can do what you want to do. So most of us are in the do what I have to do stage. And there are things that we just have to do. We have to work jobs that we don't want to work. We have to do things like that, adult stuff that we don't want to do, pay bills, all those different things. So when it comes to entertainment, that's things that we do want to do. And those are things that you go out and, you know, do you share in the same, you know, do you have the same values when it comes to entertainment? Do you like the same things? Because you could potentially spend a lot of time doing those things. And you want to be able to enjoy the same forms of entertainment so that's time that you can spend with somebody that you love, that you're dating, that you're in a relationship with, that you can spend the rest of your life with, where it's something where you can build that other part of your relationship. Because, you know, you with that person through the serious things, it would also be good. And I'm not saying that is crucial, you know, because maybe you don't like, you know, they like PlayStation, you don't like that. But you should be able to enjoy some of the same forms of entertainment because you don't want your significant other to be out having fun and they're out having fun with somebody else and not you. You want to be able to enjoy some of the same things. All right. Two more. 13, is he manipulative? Does he manipulate you? Does he make you feel guilty? Does he play on your emotions so he can get what he wants out of you? That's not good. Some guys do that. They'll do nonsense and make you feel guilty for it. And he'll do something wrong to you and then make you feel like it's your fault that he did it. You were negligent in some area. So that's why he went and cheated on you. Or he didn't tell you some major purchase that he made because, you know, whatever. No. If he's showing signs that he's manipulative, that's something that you want to look at because that might not be somebody you want to be with. Right? The last one. Does he show selfish characteristics? Which is kind of similar to what I just said because being manipulative is a form of selfishness or a result of it. So does he show selfish characteristics? Those are all things that you want to look at. Those are all things that you want to look at. Because good men don't do things like that. What a good man does is he prefers you over himself. I'm not saying that good guys don't do stupid stuff. We do. I do dumb junk. I get mad at my girlfriend, make a big deal out of stuff that I shouldn't. I don't call out her name. I don't cheat on her. Never called her a B or a H or none of that stuff. I've never said that to her face. I've never said it behind her back. I don't refer to her in that kind of stuff, jokingly or not. I don't refer to women in those types of things. So I'm saying a good man honors you. When he's mad at you, he's still going to treat you a certain way. When I'm mad at my girlfriend and I rushed out of her place and she left her trash out on the breezeway, I still grabbed that trash and I still take it and I threw it away. Because even though I'm mad at her, she still deserves to be treated a certain way. Do I mess up? Yeah, because I yell sometimes and I don't like it. It makes me feel guilty. It makes me feel bad because she don't need to be yelled at. I'm not calling out her name, none of that stuff, but she still don't need to be yelled at. So I'm not saying that the good guys are perfect. We're not, but we're not like those other dudes. Our characteristics are different. I still treat her the same way whether I'm mad at her or not. I'm still going to take her trash out. You know what I'm saying? I still want to know that she made it home safe. And most of the time, my girlfriend don't even come to my place. I don't have her come here because I don't want her to come to my place. And then if she hang out late, then she has to drive home by herself dark at night. And she only stay like 10 minutes away from me. But I don't want her to have to drive home by herself. Those are things that good men think about. We don't take advantage of our women. We want them to be happy. You know what I'm saying? We're not manipulative. And I'm saying when you're talking about choosing a good man, you have to look at all of those things. You have to realize, too, that you deserve that. You have to know that because a lot of times, you know, ladies that I talk to, it's like, it's almost like, you know, I got to get this because it's like, I hate to use the word settle. I don't really like particularly like that word, but I almost can't even think of a better one at this point. So, spend some time and think about a husband. What makes a good husband? And if you're somebody of faith, the scripture tells us that said husbands should love their wives like Christ loved the church and gave himself for. Well, how did he love the church? He loved the church to the point that he was born to die for the church, to redeem the church. That's a high bar. That's a much higher bar than Boaz. Boaz was just rich. That's all anybody know about him. Most of the people that's throwing his name out there, they just know he was rich. That's it. But he didn't die for Ruth. He had to die for her. So, how to choose a good man? How you choose a good man? I think most of the things I said on the list were bad. A lot of them were bad things. He shouldn't be none of those things. He should be a man that has integrity. He should be a man who knows how to treat a woman, knows how to lead and serve. He should be a man that approaches you, and he should never leave you hanging. He should never have you wondering what the nature of your relationship is. He should never have you wondering why he, well, you got to, you know, I have women reach out to me and ask me, well, what does this mean? You dating a man and you have to ask me what his actions mean, or you have to get me to try to define the nature or status of your relationship. You should not be in a relationship with a man and you don't know what the status of that relationship is. You should know that. A good man comes into a relationship first of all with a purpose. He's dating because he wants to get married. You know, he's dating because he wants to establish something. He's trying to go somewhere with that. And you should know what that is. You should know what that is. You should not be vulnerable like that, left out there hanging and open where you don't know what his intentions are. You shouldn't have to be fishing and trying to figure that out, having to ask your girlfriends, what do you think this means? No, he should be telling you that. I told my girlfriend out the gate, I date for marriage. She thought I was in a rush to get married because she hadn't heard that. No, I'm not in a rush to get married. I was not in a rush to get married. I was being upfront and honest with her. I wanted to let her know, look, this is what I date for. I want to get married. And I need you to know that up front. That way, if you're not interested in getting married, then you can say, okay, cool. You good, but I'm good with this. I don't want to date you. I told her up front what my intentions were. And that's what a good man does. He should tell you what his intentions are up front so you know. And that way you can make a decision. Oh, okay, I don't want to get married. Oh, yeah, I want to get married too. So then, you know, that don't mean you're going to marry him. You know, it doesn't. You don't know him, but he's telling you what his intentions are, which means that this is serious. I'm not dating because I'm trying to sleep with you. I'm not dating because I'm just bored. I just got out of a relationship, and I'm trying to you know, occupy my time so I don't have to be lonely. No. We should know going in, you should already know what you're looking at. I'm not saying you need to have a checklist in your purse. I'm not saying that, but you should have some idea. You should know what you want and what you don't want, what's good and what's not good, because we ain't all the same. There are good men out here. There are men that are not good. There are suitable men, and there are men who are unsuitable. There are men who have learned what it means to be a man, and there are men who have not learned and maybe will, maybe won't. But the bottom line is all we have at any given time is now. So if he's not that now, it's not your responsibility to bring him to that point. I'm sorry if you saw a meme that said that. It's not your responsibility to lead a man into manhood. That's not your responsibility. That's the responsibility of a parent. And whatever his father didn't teach him, whatever he didn't know, at the point that a man decides, it's going to be my last thing, at a point that a man decides that he wants to be with a woman, it becomes his responsibility to learn what it means to be a man. It's not your responsibility to teach him that. It's not your responsibility to lead the horse to water so he can take a drink. That's not your responsibility. That burden is not yours. That's his. All right? That's all I have to say on this subject. I forgot to play my commercial, but I do have two books. The first one is an ebook, Ladies' Little Black Book, 21 Questions on Men, Love, and Relationships. And the most recent one is Outdated, Rethinking How Men Date Women, where I talk about dating and dating for the purpose of marriage. And it's a good book. Gives us some foundation on dating, and it gives at the end of each chapter, I give you you know, I kind of summarize and give you some points to look at, and then I give you like some probing questions at the end that you should ask men that are pursuing you. All right, so that's the end of our show. I have to play my commercial next week. I ain't gonna do that to you. Thank you for listening to the whole show, 2802, wherever you are. I have an idea who you might be, but I'm not sure. But I thank you for listening. Come back next Tuesday. If you have any ideas, 2802, on what show topics, inbox me on Facebook. Let me know, and we will we can pull it off. We'll pull it off. So thanks, everyone. Everyone have a great night. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll do it again next Tuesday.